Shifting baselines.
Welcome to Shifting Baselines, a podcast on sustainability and club culture dedicated to creating awareness, sharing knowledge, and diving into the complex relationship between the planet and raving. In this episode, musician and climate campaigner Nono Gigster takes us on a grounded journey over land and sea to visit places and people that create change. Join the grounded travel to explore how slowness and partying can go very well together. We hope you feel inspired while listening. Thinking about the impact of human behavior on the planet can be tough. Please be gentle with yourself when engaging with the content we are sharing with you. Take breaks when needed. Play your favorite record or drink some water. If you want to learn more about the project, please visit refugeworldwide.com/artists/shiftingbaselines.
Hi, Nono here. Welcome to this podcast in which I would like to share some thoughts on shifting baselines in dance music culture and environmental justice, specifically from the angle of mobility and space. What are the impacts of the places where we play and listen to sounds? Who traveled to and from these places, and how, and maybe also why? My name is Nono and I play music as Gigster. Although I have a background as an academic, a DJ, and a climate campaigner, I primarily understand myself as a dancer. I'm someone who enjoys moving through space with grace, and I am aware that I have had access to certain experiences and entertain certain perspectives because of my privilege. I am an able-bodied, white, cis woman who was born into a middle-class family in Belgium. I grew up in a rural, rare area in France and later had access to academic education. I hold two strong passports, Belgian and French, and I currently live in a city, Berlin, where the impacts of the climate crisis are moderately felt compared to regions in the global south. Today, I'm taking you on a grounded journey I took from Berlin to the UK and France via Belgium and the Netherlands. I want to acknowledge that Europe and other countries in the global north hold large responsibility for the climate crisis. I also want to recognize that these places host many key dance music institutions, but that as a culture and art form, dance music was not necessarily birthed here or within the social spheres that are currently most responsible for environmental damage. Beyond numbers and facts, I would mostly like to open up questions, enter in conversations, and acknowledge that our common and my personal understanding of these topics are ever evolving. Section 1. Place as a space, venues, and their roots. Perhaps unsurprisingly, I am a Berlin-based DJ, and this is where our journey starts, as we'll reflect on the impact that venues might have on the climate. I like to think of venues as trees anchoring in a ground that holds us, places with strong roots and white branches connecting us to space. But as we'll see, that metaphor might not be so adapted, as the stability of venues, especially in Berlin, is often threatened. I moved to Berlin around 2014, and one of the reasons that attracted me to the city was the wealth of music events as well as the quality of experiences they offered. It's funny to think that I've been here for nearly a decade, and although I go out fairly regularly, there are still plenty of music spaces or places in general that I have not visited. In November 2023, Cliptopia organized a green club training and invited us to visit the Impact Hub in CRCLR House and the nearby club Schwitz.
Also man benutzt zum einen den Bestand, das ist diese Idee von Weiterverwenden. Und dann dieser zweite Punkt, den ich ja gemacht habe, der war Wiederverwenden. Das heißt, man guckt, was findet man denn in der Ressource. Auch alte Fenster wurden hier verwendet. Und der dritte Punkt, den ich gemacht hatte, der war ja dann die Idee von wiederverwendbar, die Dinge einzubauen, sodass man die Verbindungen eben schraubt und klotzt, sodass man sie auch wieder auseinandernehmen kann. Das vierte Thema war ja dann, wenn man sagt, okay, ich muss jetzt neue Dinge in den Kreislauf bringen, dann zu gucken, okay, dann nehme ich sie aber aus dem ökologischen Kreislauf.
Buildings affect the environment in multiple ways. The construction and renovation use natural resources, and when in use, buildings are responsible for a significant proportion of our emissions. According to Clubtopia, a club uses the equivalent of energy within a weekend as a household would over a whole year.
Clubtopia is a project that focuses on sustainability and club scene and brings together experts to rethink the whole scene. We try to bring the knowledge into the scene that really work with it. For example, we have the Green Club Guide that you can read as a manual and directly transfer to your club. We have the Future Party Lab. We do have the roundtables and also created a code of conduct for sustainable club scene. We are doing free of charge energy consultancies also for clubs, so that many people bring together their energy and the will to change something in the scene.
Clubtopia has done a lot of work in terms of providing tools and resources to lower the impact of a club on the environment. The guide, which you can find online, points towards certain key aspects, including the bar, the toilets, light and air conditioning, waste and cleaning, electricity and heating, communication and mobility. And I asked Kati to tell me the one most important measure she would want us to take away from this Green Club Guide.
The most important is definitely change your energy to sustainable energy. Vielleicht müssen wir das nochmal irgendwie übersetzen. Das heißt, ein zertifizierter Ökostromanbieter. This is the most important step, because then the CO2 is reduced by 80% just by changing. And rethink your routines. Have a person who is in charge of sustainability measures at your club. And it's always good to look at the fridges, because there's a lot of fridges in a club and they consume up to 50% of the energy of a club. If your club has some days off, you can switch off the fridges.
Maybe there is even a chance here to act poetically. And Kati mentions the example of SWG3.
In England, they do have good examples for sustainable clubs. The project in Glasgow that's doing the body heat project, so where the heat from the dancing people is stored into the ground and then can be taken to warm up other parts of the building, or like can be used later on to heat the building. But I don't think that technical solutions are the only thing to get more sustainable. In the end, we also have to change our behavior and change how we party or how we consume.
Back to our visit. We walked through the club and discussed all the ways in which Schwutz tries to minimize its environmental footprint. There were so many details I'd never thought of before. I've been used to going to clubs to enjoy myself, and this visit gave me a deeper appreciation for the efforts behind the scenes, as well as a renewed understanding that everyone and everything is so deeply intertwined.
Ja, ganz auf Papier kann man auf Toiletten leider immer noch nicht verzichten, aber wir schauen auch da, dass wir...
Toilets and urinals, as well as the associated hand basins, usually consume the most water. Not only can you save water here, you can also save a lot of money. Taps and toilets lose different amounts of water if they are not regularly maintained and repaired. A 5-meter water thread in a toilet flush costs you 2,000 euros plus a year and wastes over 500,000 liters of precious water. It's terrifying to think that due to demand, supply and climate crisis, many parts of the world face water scarcity. It's such a precious resource, and one that I actually often take for granted when I flush down my made dense peas with drinkable water.
nutze ich das auch nochmal als Brücke, um zum Booking zu kommen, weil wir hier tatsächlich lokal arbeiten. Also die allermeisten DJs und KünstlerInnen leben in Berlin. Also wir haben super selten den Fall, dass mal jemand anreisen muss.
Venues live through us attending them, so they are more than static places. A huge part of an event's environmental footprint is related to audience and artist mobility. This percentage will largely depend on the type of event, where it's held, and who it's catered for.
Audience travel is, for most music events, one of the larger sources of carbon emissions, and according to the most recent study by A Greener Future, make up on average 40% of a festival's carbon footprint, while food and drink covers 35%. The numbers for audience travel vary greatly, between 18 up to 78%, depending on the type, scale, and location of the event. There are several organizations and new online tools that help to calculate travel-related emissions and identify measures to reduce them, such as Berlin-based Music Cares and the app Crowd Impact.
Grounding perspectives.
Musicians and audience mobility.
During the making of this podcast, I traveled from Berlin to Newcastle in the UK. I took a train from Berlin to Amsterdam during the day on Friday and took a night ferry from IJmuiden on the Dutch coast. I made friends with a seagull, slept in a cabin with a window looking onto the water, and woke up in Newcastle. When I moved to Berlin in 2014, I started to play in small-ish venues. Shortly after, I occasionally got invitations to play abroad, and at the time, I was only vaguely aware of the impact of aviation and global warming, and I thought eating vegetarian, recycling, and voting for certain political parties would, so to say, make up for the impacts of flying. You know, generally trying to be a good citizen or something. During that period, there was an increased media coverage of climate catastrophes, and I started feeling really quite anxious. As I dug deeper into the ways in which my passion and practices contributed to the climate crisis, I realized that mobility made up the largest part of my carbon footprint. Calculating individual carbon footprint can be problematic, and this for a number of reasons, but it can also become an interesting tool if we use it on the scale of society at large. Eating vegetarian allows me to reduce my yearly CO2 equivalent footprint by 460 kilograms, whereas one return flight between Berlin and Rome, for example, is equivalent to 700 kilograms, so way more.
No mode of transport is more unjust than air travel. A 2020 study estimates that only 2% to 4% of the world's population flew internationally in 2018. It concludes that 1% of the global population, a small minority of wealthy frequent flyers, is responsible for 50% of commercial aviation emissions. Few frequent flyers heat up the planet at the expense of others. Residents exposed to noise and particle pollution from planes, local ecosystems, future generations, and those in the global south who are already bearing the brunt of earth heating.
80% of the world population have never set a foot in a plane. This statistic was the one that really shocked me. I realized I lived in social and cultural circles where flying was not only frequent but also heavily normalized, and the passport privileges that allow it are rarely questioned. It's also important to address the fact that a high carbon lifestyle is inseparable from extractivism. Frequent flying doesn't only threaten our futures, it is enabled through a system of exploitation of the earth, people, and other species. I think that if we care about collective liberation, we need to include these dynamics in the conversation. Around 2018, I met a producer and DJ called Joe, who traveled by land and sea only, and my sense of what is possible or desirable started shifting. For a few years, I tried to experiment with avoiding flight transit for personal and professional purposes. Eventually, the case-by-case approach didn't quite suit me, and as someone who had so much privilege, I decided to quit flying altogether. I haven't been on a plane since March 2019. I
I arrived in Newcastle in the morning after a cozy night in the ferry. Some of these long, grounded journeys are challenging, and I have definitely had plenty of stories of delayed trains and being stuck in storms, but this time I felt lucky and grateful to wake up in Newcastle before my performance and have some time to explore the city I was going to perform in. I had long conversations with Katie, who does the booking of Cobalt, an absolutely adorable family-run independent venue. Later, our conversations were echoed by a series of voice note exchanges.
Hey, Nono, it's Kate here.
I asked her if she thinks about sustainability when booking artists for their venue.
Absolutely, yes. Hands down, yes, yes, yes. Increasingly, we won't consider booking somebody unless I know that they've got another gig, at least another gig, if not another two. And not only that, but we also actively seek artists based in the UK. Are we able to discuss it with other people in the industry? I do. When I send inquiries to agents, I pretty much always raise awareness of our environmental policy. I feel that it is often overlooked and not really given any credence. It doesn't appear to be much of a discussion with agents. Likewise, I do also tell DJs about it, but I, again, haven't found much interest. If I'm really honest, I don't feel that it's got much traction within the industry.
Okay, so it might be worth going back a few years prior to this exchange, one of the boldest attempts to open an industry-wide conversation on the issue. In March 2021, the collective Clean Scene published a report stating that the average touring DJ emits approximately 35 tons of CO2 per year.
By traveling over 180,000 kilometers per year, the average DJ from Resident Advisor's top 1,000 has doubled the impact of even the world's frequent flying super emitters. The average touring DJ emits 35 tons of CO2 per year, and their carbon footprint is more than 70 times higher than the recommended personal carbon budget of approximately 2 tons of CO2. The data shows a great disparity between those traveling the most and the least within the list. The average footprint of the 100 DJs traveling the most is nearly 88 tons versus just 3.3 tons for the 100 traveling the least. This unequal distribution of carbon emissions mirrors the disparity of environmental harm caused by a small fraction of the population.
To be on track with the Paris Agreement, we'd actually need to be under 0.7 tons per year. We are miles away from that. And even within our culture, the report outlines that the disparity is real. This report has been quoted countless times, but the wider systemic difficulties within our society have made it very difficult for the industry to collectively address the issue. Katie and I discussed the fact that it's sometimes cheaper to fly someone from Berlin to Newcastle than to book a train from London.
Train travel in the UK is absolutely astonishingly stupid, in particular to London, which appears to treat itself as a different country. I've got family in Bristol, and I really hate the fact that sometimes it is just prohibitive to get a train, and it is literally a third of the price to get an EasyJet flight.
The financial pressure on independent venues makes it particularly difficult to prioritise travel.
I will often only take a booking if the routing works. I quite often won't book an artist if the routing isn't right. I've learned that sort of on a financial level, it's just not feasible for us. We're so prohibited by money, it's just not feasible for us to get an artist over just for one gig. Well, particularly a band, DJs. Yeah, I mean, that has happened. It does still happen sometimes, but less and less so. And often that's just because it's also much more financially affordable for us to share travel with at least one or two other venues.
Interestingly, I feel like there has been a growing industry of green consultancy and labels in the last year, which is great. But it's hard to know who and what to trust. What's the organization worldview? What do they think the climate crisis is? And how do they want to address it? Sometimes I feel like these organizations lack an intersectional approach and a political understanding. In terms of comparing greenhouse gas of different modes of transport, I usually recommend the website atmosphere.de because their calculator shows CO2 equivalent, not only carbon dioxide. And again, hypermobility is about so much more than emissions. There are health concerns for people living around airports as well as those who regularly fly. There are issues around land grabbing when airports are being expanded or for offsetting projects. So here's another thing. Offsets do not really reduce emissions. They often lead to local conflicts or land grabbing, and they're considered as carbon colonialism. These issues are incredibly complicated, and it's hard for people in the scene to navigate making the right decision. I sat down with DJ and producer Nix, who also co-runs BAD, the Black Artist Database. Nix and I had met in February 2023 when I talked about sustainability on a panel in Brussels.
It was kind of like a two-way between my agent and I. So when it comes to traveling, it's around where can we not take flights where possible? Where can we combine more than one thing in one? So if I'm DJing in a region, is there like an additional activity that can be added there so that you're also being resourceful with your skill and your energy and time, but not jumping from like place to place that you have to then fly to essentially? Maybe it's like, if I'm in Berlin, then could I do something else in Germany that same weekend?
Changing the way promoters book and DJs tour holds big potential as well as challenges for our scene. This would require stronger collaboration between agencies and more debates around the way we organize and think about partying. When I was in the UK, I visited Stevie and Susie B, who organized Free Rotation, a summer festival which takes place in Wales. Stevie started performing as a musician in the 1980s, and there have been many different stages to his career.
I think if it wasn't for low-cost flying, I wouldn't have a professional music career, which is now my only source of income. But I realise this is unsustainable. Up until the early 2000s, I was a part-time musician and had various other part-time jobs over the years. When low-cost flying arrived, the gigs started to roll in from Europe at first, and then further afield. For the last 15 years, I've had a steady flow of club and festival gigs from all over Europe and as far afield as Canada, Japan and Colombia. The more of these gigs you do, the more you become recognised as an international artist, and it has a knock-on effect. It also increases sales of releases. I simply can't justify flying so much anymore, so I'm winding it down bit by bit and hoping that I can come up with a solution to maintain my professional status. Music is my life.
As a grounded DJ, I identify with what Stevie mentioned. The more you play, the more recognition you get. It's a real conundrum in our scene and something I could talk about for hours. Ultimately, there's more at stake than environmental sustainability. The question is also one of social sustainability.
From the very kind of beginning of my relationship with my agent, I kind of made it clear, when you know yourself, you know your limits, your bandwidth, your capacities. So, and that's something that my agent's very good at, is kind of grouping things. If we group two in one, then the next weekend, there's a relief, there's space for others, there's space for myself, and we're not exhausting as much. I also don't just DJ. Like, I run a platform, I produce. So that might be me being inconsiderate of other people whose sole income is just DJing, maybe. But I know for myself, for now anyways, I don't view it as a healthy lifestyle. For me, you know, everyone's different.
Whilst economic issues remain a huge question and one we're not all able to address the same way, it seems like there is a strong desire from some DJs, promoters and other protagonists of the scene to slow down and to be in search of new forms of dancing together. Stevie and Susie B have carefully been considering mobility to and from the festival.
Our current system to cut down on flights is that we require artists taking long-haul flights to have a minimum of 5 gigs or to be staying a minimum of 3 weeks in Europe to help balance the negative effects of the flight. All artists stay at the festival for the whole weekend, so they don't just buzz in and out for one night, which also cuts down on shuttle transport too. Some European artists already choose to take the train, and we want to take this further by encouraging more artists who are travelling from Europe to use the train. We're in discussion with artists about that now. Within the UK, we provide a bus service from London, and there's also a bus organised from Manchester by festival regulars. We encourage car sharing via our forum on our website. We're increasing our support of local artists, and we offset the carbon from artists' flights through donations to our rainforest charity partner, The Size of Wales.
Okay, confession moment here. Free Row has been my favourite festival for years, and I've had more musical, spiritual and emotional insights in this place than I have probably than in most places on earth. I think the fact that everyone, artists included, stay for the whole weekend really contributes to it being such a special gathering.
As the authors Jeremy Gilbert and Tim Lawrence mention in their podcast, love is the message.
DJs have become the sort of ideal model of the postmodern, post-40s neoliberal worker. They're hypermobile, completely individualized, don't have a community or a set of colleagues. They just literally travel from one place to another, alone, doing their thing, and then leave.
Maybe we need to challenge the idea of the individualized and successful genius and aim for more communal, restorative, slower and sufficient approaches of these postmodern lifestyles. Turning away from celebrity culture, this constant pressure for more, be it money or so-called visibility, would also require finding different ways of being accountable to each other, of making a living, and ultimately start a conversation about what each of us needs to live a good life. When I played in Newcastle during that trip, my name wasn't announced on the lineup. I enjoyed the idea that I, for once, didn't feel like a product in the market, often not big enough on Instagram and not famous enough to be the headliner. I was booked to share my craft, and I played all night long, which is always a pleasure.
Eat the rich, decolonization, degrowth, and grassroots resistance.
Yeah, I'm impressed we managed to do 40 minutes without having yet said the word
capitalism.
You know, like.
After my gig in the UK, I took a night ferry on Sunday Eve, arriving at IJmuiden on Monday morning and taking a local train to Amsterdam and another train to Brussels. That evening, I played a show on Kiosk Radio and then headed to Charleroi, where I was due to speak at a panel about creative freedom and ecological sobriety.
Mais est-ce que être sobre est la seule chose que les arts peuvent faire?
The panel brought together different artists, including Christopher Meyerhans, Benjamin Verdonck, Léa Tarral, and myself. Tarral insisted that conversations about ecology and sustainability should discuss decolonization.
De quoi on parle en fait quand on parle d'écologie? De quoi on parle quand on parle de durabilité? Écologie politique? Pourquoi politique? Parce que pour nous, c'était important de mettre en avant que le désastre dans lequel on est.
In her book, Pour une écologie pirate, Fatima Wasak proposes to bring questions of domination that are little questioned or invisibilized in the environmentalist field back to the center of the political discourse. She writes, a system in which a very small part of the population is hypermobile is currently intertwined with one where a vast majority simply isn't free to move. And maybe the key to our emancipation lies as much in reducing high consumption lifestyle as in questioning these power dynamics and opening up borders.
After the panel in Charleroi on Tuesday, I traveled to Rennes in France for another panel during the Festival Transmusical on Thursday. I spent the Wednesday traveling from Belgium to Brittany alongside David Hill, who works as a sustainability consultant and was also attending both conferences. He told me about his work with Zone Franche, a network dedicated to music from around the world.
Ça coûte plus cher de prendre des avions, même si on a encore envie de prendre des avions, on pourra plus faire comme avant. Et on a tiré les fils, et on s'est rendu compte en tirant les fils qu'il y avait...
Eh messieurs, une fois que le train est en train de partir, on a dégagé assez d'espace devant nous, nous allons pouvoir...
Hill argues that sustainability in culture does not mean closing off on local scenes and that artists shouldn't be considered like carrots.
L'écologie, c'est forcément le local, le repli sur un territoire, et donc c'est forcément exclure ce qui vient de loin, et comme si c'était la même chose pour des carottes et pour des artistes, quoi.
Sure. In terms of carbon footprint, it makes a difference to eat food that has been produced locally. But should we extend this mindset to culture?
I guess not much will change until we address the structure of our scenes and of society at large. Can it be a bottom-up movement? Should efforts come from all parts? How can resistance look like? One thing I have been increasingly interested in since I engage with issues of mobility justice is that of land justice. Again, we're back in this space and movement dynamic. In 2021, I joined the campaigner network Stay Grounded. The network brings together 200 member organizations, among them local airport opposition and climate justice groups, NGOs, trade unions, initiatives fostering alternatives to aviation like night trains, and organizations supporting communities which struggle against offset projects or biofuel plantations. It's been really humbling to work alongside campaigners and grassroots organizations from everywhere in the world, especially in the global south. And it made me realize how much resistance happens on the ground. 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 Ground.
Ground.
Ground. Ground. Ground.
Ground. Ground. Ground. Ground. Ground. Ground. Ground. Ground. Ground. Ground. Ground. Ground. Ground. Ground. Ground. Ground. Ground. Ground. Ground. Ground.
I have spoken to one of their members, Kemen.
I also have to say, you mentioned the carbon footprint of the festival, so 1,000 tons of carbon dioxide. This carbon footprint is superior to the yearly carbon footprint of Alpages. It's huge. And we like to make this parallel of the music festival of Tomorrowland Winter happening in Alpe d'Huez and the Sarenne Glacier, which is located in the Alpe d'Huez municipality. So really near the location of the festival that has disappeared last year due to climate change.
In March 2024, the Belgian festival Tomorrowland organized its winter edition in France at the Alpe d'Huez. Several organizations and citizens are protesting against the event and founded the initiative Stop Tomorrowland Alpe d'Huez. When I met with Kamel, they stressed how disheartening it was to live in the mountains, witness firsthand the ice melting over the years and the cognitive dissonance of hosting a luxurious festival in that location. The issue isn't just one of carbon emissions, but of social and environmental justice at large. Stop Tomorrowland wants to ban the festival altogether, and it wants to do so because it believes not only that it has an outrageous carbon footprint, but also because it argues that the economic arguments are skewed, that the festival isn't accessible, and especially not to the local population, that it doesn't have any cultural value, and that citizens were never consulted about this initiative.
So the price are between 100 euros and 175 euros for one day. With or without skiing. And for a week, it's between 800 euros and 7,000 euros if you take the all-inclusive experience. The argument for Tomorrowland to go in Alpe d'Huez was that it would bring money to the sector. So the argument is absolutely not the culture, but the money. Culture should first be promoting local artists, but also be accessible to local people.
This brings up many questions around the model of destination festivals. In 2021, I was invited to play at a festival in Croatia, and whilst I had a lot of fun, I also had quite complicated feelings about the imperial model behind it. And speaking about these issues can be difficult too. After having visited Newcastle, Brussels, Charleroi and Rennes, I took the train to the south of France, where I played in a small do-it-together party. It's run by volunteers. The party is organized in a warehouse in the outskirts of the city, and the sound system is set up once a month for the event series.
Ça c'est le son avec lequel tu as voyagé?
Non. Ça c'est le son critical.
Okay.
Et en fait les autres enfin,
people danced facing the sound system. There was like a little stall with scenes about degrowth and collapsology. The meal was cooked by the crew. We all ate together. I crashed at the promoter's place. Jean-Loup and Mackie Sound System, who also own a sound system, and they drive it around Europe in the summer with a small van, playing DIT parties, squats, and all kinds of activist camps, embracing the sort of free party style. So yeah, other ways of anchoring and spreading music are not only possible, they already exist.
The day after the party, I took a night train from Toulouse to Paris, and then it took another day to travel from Paris to Berlin. Within 24 hours, I had crossed France and Germany, a somewhat short trip compared to the several days travel that took me from Berlin to Morocco earlier that year, when I took part in a 2 months residency.
Future tracks, collective paths.
Looking into the future can be challenging. Let's start with places. They're going to be increasingly impacted by the climate crisis. Festivals have already been facing extreme weather events, clubs are experiencing multiple pressures, not least economic, and the interlocking crises are possibly going to make this worse. Touring and traveling, which we talked about in our second section, is definitely going to change as well. With the rise of conflicts, borders might continue closing off, and it's hard to predict what is going to happen with ticket prices. The kerosene won't be around forever, technical solution might not fix it in time, and if they do, it will be at the cost of further social and environmental damage. And if governments decide to finally tax aviation in a fair way, which might be something we could hope for, the easy jet set lifestyle just won't be affordable anymore. Thinking about the future can be scary, but it's also necessary because the most vulnerable will be affected first, and having these conversations can allow us to dream up fair futures. We started a sharing group with other French DJs. Simon, who plays as Deborah M. Labagarre, talks about his intentions. He's hoping for more conversations around these topics.
Je me permets d'enchaîner rapidement. Simon, je fais la musique sous le nom de Deborah M. Labagarre. J'ai pas pris l'avion depuis 4 ans. Ce que j'essaie de mettre, c'est ma première dépense carbone annuelle potentielle. Donc je vais au.
Like me, Simon hasn't flown in 5 years, but the other DJs acknowledge that not everyone can afford to stick to this kind of commitment.
Après, si tu le fais comme Simon, que tu le prends plus du tout, c'est aussi une option qui permet de moins se torturer. En tout cas, sur le choix des dates. Tu sais que si ça nécessite l'avion, tu vas pas. Après, j'imagine que c'est très difficile aussi de voir passer ces opportunités-là. Et
these are the typical discussions I frequently engage in with my agent, Ailey, who works at Poly and co-authored the Clean Scene Report. Ailey has been incredibly supportive in trying to make my tours more sustainable and to coordinate performances when I'm invited to travel longer distances. This endeavor has proven to be really challenging as the infrastructure within our industry is not inherently designed to support such efforts. I am so grateful for her as she consistently provides me with support as I grapple with the internal conflict of continuing to perform shows as the world is burning.
I don't know, it's like so hard to live, you know, just this like flat, normal, everyday life. How do they... It's like our brains are not big enough to compute that. Well, mine certainly isn't.
Perhaps a moment of vulnerability here. Since I quit flying, I've been wondering how to communicate this engagement. In this podcast, I felt like using the I was both necessary to acknowledge my positionality, and it is also tricky because I am not interested in scoring moral duty points. I don't want to be compared to other artists. I don't want to guilt trip my peers, which are often also my friends and people I want to continue loving and admiring. And then being tagged as the DJ who doesn't fly can feel a bit restrictive when I put so much love, time and energy into my craft. In the last years, I've started a newsletter, which for these reasons and many others seems more fitted to the way I want to engage with people, music, the world. And if you're curious, you'll find it at nonogigs.substack.com. In the last 5 years, there have been many moments of solitude, frustration, and despair. And beyond these emotions, I also think nothing will change until we get together and address the situation structurally. Environmental justice is a social justice issue, one that requires collective moves. Collective moves. Get together. Together. joining forces with activists from around the world through the Stay Grounded network has provided a sense of community that I am very grateful for. It's also giving me hope to continue engage with music and vice versa. Activism takes many forms, and beyond the gentrified discourses that sometimes surround it, I am humbled to remember that a lot of actions often happen not only on the ground, but also undercover, underground. What's music? How could we define music? To answer this question may vary depending on culture, discipline, and point of view. Music is often associated with sound, a vibration propagating as an acoustic wave through space. In essence, it's an art form primarily existing in time and space. What if we, as humans, rethought our moves in a beautiful way? What if we thought of our movements as the acoustic waves that move through space and artfully reach us as music? Maybe one quality that could inspire us is the quality of harmony, to move harmoniously through space and time, organize ourselves like notes concurring and listening to each other. I like to think of myself as a grounded musician not only because I travel through land and sea, because through my work with Stay Grounded I am interested in land justice, but also because what music never stops teaching me is humility and gratitude, being grounded.
Thank you for listening to Shifting Baselines. Curation and narration of this episode, Nono Gigster. Idea, concept and creative production, Kerstin Meissner as part of her research fellowship at the Research Institute for Sustainability, Helmholtz Center, Potsdam. Sound design and composition, Yuria Flaskina. Editing, Sarah Farina. Artwork, Upashona Ghosh. Accessibility support, Saverio Cantoni. Mixing and mastering, Yuria Flaskina. Support and financial administration, Research Institute for Sustainability, Helmholtz Center Potsdam, especially Achim Maas. Broadcasting and publication, Refuge Worldwide.
Shifting baselines.